misconduct is not a disqualifier for bonuses and extra time off, at least not at the Internal Revenue Service, according to findings of the Inspector General there. More than 1,100 employees at the agency who either didn't pay their taxes or underreported their taxes still received more than $1 million in bonuses. Tom Shoup is editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine. And, Tom, it strikes me that this is not so much, I mean, it certainly doesn't make the IRS look good, but it's the story, I think, and your colleague Eric Katz gets at it, is broader than that, because this is another another chance for the average citizen who doesn't pay much attention to the government to say, there they go again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's one of those ones that are really bad because, you know, there's a certain segment of the population that doesn't, that are not big believers in what government does. And they're disinclined to think that anything that government does is worthwhile. But this cuts across a much broader range of people. Pretty much anybody's going to look at this and say, well, come on, you're giving bonuses to IRS employees who haven't paid their taxes. This kind of black eye, it's really bad for government.
And especially, I think, when it's the least popular agency in the entire federal government. I mean, there are more people in the month of April that dislike the Internal Revenue Service than just about anything going. I mean, I would think that toe fungus and dental work are probably more popular in the month of April than the IRS.
I think just about anything is not just in April, throughout the rest of the year, too.
The issue here is this report from the Inspector General, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration reporting on this. There's, of course, been a little bit of controversy revolving around his office with the whole issue of the 50, now I don't remember which ones.
The 50-something.
Thank you. Yes, exactly, to use a technical term.
Yes.
The whole lowest,
we're experts.
The whole lowest learner issue over the last several months. Do we have any sense that that is coloring any of this? I haven't seen anything that indicates that there's any pushback on J. Russell George's office on this report.
No, I don't think so. I think this one is pretty much by the book. This was just a review of the documentation of what went on at the agency. So I think I haven't seen any hint that there's any kind of controversy surrounding the conclusions.
Okay, so that makes it, that if anything, then makes it worse, though, because if nobody's objecting to the content of this report, that means that people across the ideological spectrum in Congress, people who tend to be more or less sympathetic toward the federal government in general, the Internal Revenue Service in particular, don't seem to have issue with the way that this information's presented or the content of the information, and that means that pretty much everybody says, yeah, this must be what's going on.
Yeah, and no one really is stepping up to defend this in any way. The closest is the National Treasury Employees Union, who has characterized it as a relatively small number of employees, which is, I guess, technically true. But no one's really saying, hey, this didn't happen, or there's a plausible explanation for why it happened. Apparently, this was, you know, in the agreement with the union, the agency is essentially not allowed to take these factors into account when determining bonuses. But I think there's going to be broad agreement that that's got to change.
Well, and your colleague Eric Katz points out something that is in our story too on federalnewsradio.com. Danny Werfel tried to kill these awards. And the union said, you can't do that. We have a collective bargaining agreement that says you have to pay these things out. Now, the Eric's reporting that the union saying that that collective bargaining agreement stated disciplinary action against an employee should not preclude a performance award that would otherwise be granted. So according to the CBA, even if you do this misconduct, if you've earned the award on based on other criteria, you still get it. And I'm not surprised to learn through Eric that the agency agreed, it says, to look into the feasibility of changing the policy. You think?
Yes. It really does beg the question, though, of why someone didn't think of this earlier on in the process.
Yeah.
The agency signed on to something I mean, I'm just surprised that someone at some point didn't say, well, you know, wait a second. There are at least certain forms of misconduct that ought to preclude somebody from getting a bonus.
Yeah, and I wouldn't think that you could argue with NTEU for asking something like that to be included or whatever. I would think it's on the onus is on the agency to say, I'm not sure that's a really good idea. I'm not sure that would look very good.
Right, and at least to say, well, hey, if the misconduct involves non-payment of taxes, then we can't allow that.
Because that's a fireable offense at the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes. And still, it's amazing the number of employees who have the guts to work at the IRS and not pay their taxes.
But here's the bottom line. What we don't know, what I haven't seen any reporting on, is I haven't seen any reporting on how many people at the IRS, relative to the overall population of the United States, are not paying their taxes. Is the ratio higher or lower or the same or whatever? And I think that would be an interesting number to see.
Yeah, I think historically the numbers haven't been out of whack. I don't know for sure. But really, the bar ought to be much higher if you're an employee of the IRS than the average citizen.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, if the disparity is, say, 10% of people in the population generally don't pay, and 0.5% at the IRS don't pay, well, that might make sense. If it's 5% and 3%, well, that's really not good.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a large number of people who are going to say the appropriate figure is 0%.
Well, yeah, but you know what? We're dealing with human beings here. You're always going to have knuckleheads. I mean, right. You have somebody in the military that stuck a thumb drive in a computer in the Middle East and didn't think anything could happen, and we got Buckshot Yankee. So there's always going to be somebody.
Yes.
All right. Back to the broader implication of this, Tom. The impression that this creates in the average person about what his or her government is doing. What do we do about that? What do the agencies do about that other than training? I mean, this stuff, because we're dealing with humans who potentially can be knuckleheads, is this triage? We just have to figure out how to fix these problems or cover them up. That's a bad choice of words, but, handle them, deal with them as best we can when they come around.
I think for starters, there should be more of an acknowledgement that we're in an era where we need increased vigilance in government about this kind of thing. There are enough problems already in terms of the way people perceive government and the challenges of running a government in an era of budget cuts and sequestration and whatever, that people ought to be within agencies more vigilant than they've been in the past about policing these kinds of things. And when they're negotiating these kinds of agreements, to say in advance, wait, we can't have that happen, and to pay more attention to how these policies are being implemented and proactively raise these things as red flags, even if they can't do anything about it. You know, you're better off as an agency saying, hey, we have this issue and our hands are tied and we're going to work to change that, rather than just have these things come out one after the other.
Tom Shoups, editor-in-chief of Government Executive Magazine, and we'll link to Eric's piece at federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon. Tom, thanks, my friend. Oh,
my
hey,
pleasure.
By the way, big promotion for you. Congratulations
yeah.
on that.
Thank you very much.
What's the deal on that?
Well, I'm now executive vice president of Government Executive Media Group, which is, you know, I had one too few executives in my title, which I think just means more work for me.
I'm sure it does. I'm just going to keep calling you editor-in-chief at Government Executive Magazine.
Because I think that would be just fine.
I don't think I can spit that whole thing out every single time.
Yes.
Thank you.
It would eat up our entire segment.
That's right. Thank you very much, my friend. Have a great weekend.